Hey everybody, welcome back to the Curiosity Chronicles. We are jumping into one episode this time, for once I'm not doing a series, on pagan gods. And when I say pagan gods, I mean gods that are mentioned in the Old Testament and are worshipped by mostly extinct cultures. I don't think there's a single god on this podcast that is still worshipped in the world at large, unless maybe by some very small and way out there cult. But I don't think that's true. At the outset here, just going to make a mention, this is not an explicit episode by any means. It's tame, but there are a few things that I did not want to skip over that if you listen to this with children around, maybe don't. Just very small little snippets here and there. And if you're squeamish, especially towards the end of this episode, there is some talk of sacrifices and things like that. If it turns your stomach, just be aware that that is coming up. So, with that in mind, let's jump into Gods of the Old Testament, the one and only episode on the Curiosity Chronicles. I am Brett Bielsma. I am your host, and this is what I was curious about lately. First up of these gods of the Old Testament is Dagon, or Dagon. It can be spelled two different ways, D-A-G-O-N or D-A-G-A-N. That is a god worshipped extensively throughout the Middle East, and most commonly referred to as the Semitic god of crop fertility. So crop fertility, not human fertility, because that is a distinction that comes up later. Dagon is from the Hebrew or Ugaritic word for grain, which is why most scholars seem to agree that he was the god of crop fertility. And for those that don't know, like myself, before I started this episode, Ugaritic is the ancient language, the extinct language of Ugarit. And I swear, I hope I'm pronouncing that right. I tried to look up a lot of pronunciations from this because a lot of it's ancient stuff, but I forgot about that one. So I'm just going based on phonetics. That's the extinct culture that's in modern-day Syria. A lot of different texts from that country and that language cropped up throughout this episode. I don't always mention it, but a lot of these gods are mentioned in Ugaritic text. The cult of Dagon holds that Dagon is the father of Baal. We're getting to Baal later. And Dagon is the chief god, most likely, for sure a god, but most likely the chief god of the Philistines. And the Philistines are fairly interesting, and they actually are still part of our modern-day culture, although we don't necessarily refer to them as that. But the Philistines were a sea people, most likely of Aegean origin. And they may have come from Crete, but there's no actual archaeological evidence of that, but there is some circumstantial evidence that maybe that's where they had come from. But they show up in Egyptian records as early as 1190 BC, attacking Egypt, and they were repulsed. And so they settled in the coastal plain of Palestine, what we know as Palestine now. And they probably arrived roughly around the same time as the Israelites and were in constant conflict, as per the Old Testament, until they were finally defeated and subjugated by King David. Later, the area that was settled by the Philistines was given the name Palestine by the Greeks. So now you know what the background is of the Palestinian people of today. They descended from the Philistines. Kind of adds a little bit of a new dimension to the whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict. It's been going on since the Bible. Doesn't seem likely to end anytime soon. It's only been 4,000 years. Anyway, I digress. The Philistines had many gods, and that included Dagon, which they probably adopted from the Canaanite people. The Canaanite people that were in the land of Canaan before Israel showed up. They probably adopted many of their gods from them, and they think that Dagon was one of them. Dagon was also worshipped by the ancient Amorites and many of the other Middle Eastern people of that time period. There's some uncertainty to the appearance of Dagon because, and this is how I was taught when I was a kid, going to church in Sunday school, and I think even in grade school, in Bible classes and things like that, I was always taught that Dagon was a merman, which is just a funny word to me. Half fish, half human. And some people still hold to that belief, and it's based on an interpretation of his name. So some scholars believe that from the waist up, or the belly button up, he was a man, and from the belly button down, he was a fish. And there is some evidence to support this, but most scholars now agree that this is probably erroneous. They think that this is an erroneous translation of the name Dagon that seems to indicate something about fish in one of the ancient languages, but it's becoming more and more accepted that Dagon was the god of crop fertility, had nothing to do with fish, and that was what the name Dagon means, the Hebrew and Ugaritic, as I said, for crops, or for grain, excuse me, and he probably had nothing to do with fish. But there's no way to know for sure, because there are motifs that could be attributed to Dagon that indicate that he was a merman. And one little interesting aspect of Dagon, if this fish god motif is correct, it could play into the story of Jonah. Because Dagon was also worshipped by the Assyrians, which included the city of Nineveh. Thus, a prophet coming from the belly of a fish would have instant credibility in the city of Nineveh. Now, it's a story I read. To me, it doesn't necessarily hold water. I didn't mean that as a pun, but I see what I did there. Doesn't necessarily hold water to me because a prophet that comes from the belly of a fish seems more likely to be a prophet of Dagon, which of course was not the case. But it could be something that happened, but there's no way to know for sure. We do know certain stories about Dagon in the Bible, and that's one thing about these Old Testament gods is there aren't a huge amount of contemporary sources. There's the Bible, and then there's archaeological evidence. I'm not going to get into a religious debate. I believe in the Bible. Some people don't. I'm using the Bible as part of my sources, but I also try to look elsewhere for sources, and I do try to give a more historical perspective as opposed to a religious perspective. I don't mean this to be a religious perspective of these gods. If you're looking for that, there are many other podcasts that you can go to. But I do want to mention some things from the Bible because they are interesting. For example, the temple that Samson pulls down when he kills himself as well as many of the Philistines was a temple to the god Dagon. And same thing when the Philistines capture the Ark of the Covenant, they bring it to the temple of Dagon. Not the same one, of course. And that's when you find the story of Dagon continually bowing before the Ark of the Covenant, Dagon falling over and bowing. And after Saul killed himself in battle with the Philistines, when the Philistines cut his head off, they hung his head from the temple of Dagon. So he does crop up in the Bible fairly often, although it's never mentioned in the Bible what he looks like. And there is, as I said, still no right answer to that question. So moving on to who some people think is the son of Dagon, and that is the god Baal. Now, Baal was a tricky one because Baal is just translated to mean Lord. So it's hard to track down exactly who is being referred to when things like the Bible refer to Baal. So I'll get into that a little bit. For our purposes, Baal was a Canaanite god usually portrayed as the primary enemy of Yahweh or as us English speakers refer to the name Jehovah. And there's many biblical references that include specific places. Places like, or God, named like Baal Peor or Baal Hazor. And it seems to be that those are local deities to those cities. So Baal means Lord, Peor is a city or village, you know, an area. And it seems to be referring to Lord God of Peor. Not much is known about those local deities, but what it seems to me from when I did the research, it seems like that Baal Peor or Baal Hazor is just a local flavor of the god referred to more generally as Baal. Because there seems to be, within the Canaanite pantheon of gods, there seems to be a deity referred to just simply as Baal. And so most likely the specific place Baal names are just a version of the universal Baal. Which is, it's confusing. It took me a while to wrap my head around it. I guess the best example I can give is if you're up on the Bible or just Christianity in general, you might be aware that, you know, Jehovah God is sometimes referred to in the Bible as the God of Israel. But we, of course, know now that Jehovah God has his people of every nation, tribe, and tongue. So when the Bible refers to the God of Israel, that's still referring to Jehovah. It's kind of the same thing with Baal, is how I interpret it. Baal Peor is just the local version of the god Baal. So for our purposes, when we talk about Baal, we're talking about the Canaanite deity universally. To throw an extra monkey wrench into this already muddy explanation of Baal, Baal is the Canaanite version of the Babylonian god Marduk, and the Assyrians also worshipped Baal, but they referred to Baal as Hadad, and sometimes you'll see that written out as Baal Hadad. So it's, if you're ever studying these ancient deities and you see Hadad or Marduk, those are different cultures' versions of Baal, and sometimes you'll see Baal Hadad as the name instead of Hadad. It's very confusing. I'm purposely kind of trying to show you my confusion when I was doing this research, but I eventually did get there. The god Baal is also a major deity of the Hittites and the Phoenicians, which is interesting for those of you that study the Bible, because Ahab's queen Jezebel was Phoenician, and the god that she worshipped was Baal. She had a local flavor brought over from Phoenicia called Baal Melquart. I feel like I'm totally losing this. I hope you guys are still with me. Unknown how similar that deity is to Baal Hadad, but likely Baal Melquart and Baal Hadad are the same, just different cultures had different names. Okay. Now that you're still with me, hopefully, thank goodness, I appreciate you all, let's just move on and just talk about Baal. Baal is, for the Canaanite people, the Lord of the gods. And worshipped from before the Israelite exodus until well after the Babylonian exiles. So the entire time and more that Israel was in the land of Canaan, Baal was being worshipped. And Baal was being worshipped by the Canaanite people that were supposed to be expelled from Canaan, but also at times in the biblical story, of course, they were worshipped by the Israel. He was worshipped, of course, by the Israelites as well. Baal was the god of sun, rain, thunder, fertility, and agriculture. And when I say fertility, that is, I believe, human fertility. And maybe crops too. Maybe it's just all fertility. Who knows? Baal is the lord of gods. He can be god of whatever he wants, I suppose. But for sure, sun, rain, thunder, some sort of fertility, and agriculture. And like I said earlier, sometimes is seen as the son of Dagon, but also in other stories, possibly the son of the supreme being El, E-L, in these stories of the origin stories of the cultures that he was worshipped by. And if you're looking for a more popular, in our modern day culture, reference that you could compare to Baal, the Greek deity of Zeus and the Roman Jupiter are very similar in terms of what they were lord of, what they were gods over, and how they were worshipped, or how they were portrayed, I should say. Because Baal was worshipped in a what we would think of as ancient and ludicrous manner, I suppose. Worshipped in the high places with sacrifices, that's pretty basic in terms of ancient cultures, animal sacrifices. Ecstatic dancing, but then it gets a little strange. You got priests and prophets of Baal would often engage in ritualistic self-mutilation, cutting and whipping, flogging of themselves, which is, yeah, it's odd. I don't think I would want to be a prophet of Baal. There is some evidence of child sacrifice to Baal, but not nearly as much as you see with some of the other gods we'll get to later. So that may or may not be true. Evidence supports it, but nothing that strongly proves it. Let's put it that way. And then, of course, as many cultures do with the worship of certain gods, there was often ritualistic sexual intercourse. There were priests and priestesses that would engage in religious orgies in praise to their god Baal. So that is how Baal was worshipped. That is the god Baal. So when you are especially reading the Bible, Baal is mentioned over and over and over again, whether it's Baal Peor, Hazor, Hadad, etc., or just Baal by itself. Pretty much all the same god. Now you have a little bit of understanding of who and what that god was. In terms of looks, I didn't see anything definitive. My belief is similar to Jupiter and Zeus, kind of like a strong, wise man. But I'm totally guessing with that. I didn't look into that. So in terms of the look of Baal, that's something that you can look into on your own, but that's just my personal belief of what I think of when I think of, you know, a lord of all gods. So that's Baal, but let's move on. Next up is the goddess Ashtaroth, and that's how I always was taught the name. That's the name you more commonly see in the Bible, Ashtaroth. But again, just like with Baal, different names for the same god. So Ashtaroth, also more commonly within other cultural context, known as Astarte, A-S-T-A-R-T-E, Astarte. Also Ashtart and Atarat. So those are all the same goddess in the Bible, mostly referred to as, if not exclusively referred to as Ashtaroth. Ashtaroth is believed to be a juxtaposition of the name Astarte with the Hebrew word Boshet. Boshet is a Hebrew word that means shame or abomination. So by putting it together with the more common Astarte name of the goddess in creating Ashtaroth, they were, of course, condemning the worship of Ashtaroth as an abomination that would bring shame upon you. In other cultural contexts, like the Akkadian Empire and in the Babylonian Empire, you might hear Astarte or Ashtaroth referred to as Ishtar. And Ishtar is one that I've definitely heard of before I did this research. More commonly known, even you sometimes hear Ishtar mentioned in fantasy books or movies and things like that. Not very common, but I definitely have heard it more than some of the other names. Just did not realize it was the same god. So Ashtaroth is associated with fertility of crops and cattle, and she is often portrayed as the consort of Baal. Now, whether or not, depending on the story, she might be the wife of Baal, she might just be the lover of Baal. It's different cultures have different stories. Aside from being associated with the fertility of crops and cattle, that kind of goes along with her being the consort of Baal. But in terms of her own self, she is the goddess of war and sexual love. So not love, but like south of the waist love. And she was worshipped in not only Canaan, but Phoenicia again, Tyre, Sidon, Egypt. She was worshipped by the Hittites. And as we, you know, most of these gods being gods and goddesses being from the Old Testament, they're of course worshipped in Canaan. She has different symbols. She is often symbolized by a lion, which makes sense, war, lion, horse, a sphinx, a dove, or a star within a circle, which is the symbol of Venus. I don't know why. And of course, because she is the goddess of sexual love, pictures or carvings of her will often portray her as a naked woman. And like Baal, and this makes complete sense, she is often associated with sacred prostitution. So a little bit different than the ritualistic sexual intercourse of Baal, the priestesses of Ashtaroth were also prostitutes, and their prostitution was done in the service and worship of Ashtaroth. Don't ask me how, I don't understand it, but that is how she was worshipped. The most interesting thing about Ashtaroth or Astarte in what I was interested in is, and you may see where I'm going with this, she was a goddess that later on was adopted by the Greeks, and the same goddess was given a new name, and that name was Aphrodite. So when you see the stories like the Disney movie Hercules, I don't even know if she's in that, but you see some of the more tame versions of Aphrodite, where she's the goddess that causes two people to fall in love, and they get married and live happily ever after. That is a total Disneyfication of Ashtaroth. She was not the goddess of emotional love. She, to put it bluntly, she is the goddess of sex. And earlier I mentioned, or no, I don't know if I mentioned it earlier. I'm already forgetting. I listened to another podcast that continually refers to Aphrodite as the goddess of anything south of the waist. So that's how you should think of Ashtaroth. And then later, Aphrodite. Very different from Christianity, let's put it that way. Very different from Christianity. Speaking of being far from Christianity, let's talk about the Canaanite god Moloch, or Molech. I'm not sure, I've heard pronunciations different ways, but I'm going to go with Moloch. If you want to look it up, it's spelled M-O-L-O-C-H. You might also see the spelling M-O-L-E-C-H. Same god, just different spellings. Moloch is a Canaanite god, but also worshipped by the Amorites. And the origins of Moloch are uncertain. But in terms of depictions, mostly depicted as a calf or a bull, or a human body and the head of a bull. But those are guesses at best, because there is nothing set in stone that has been proven archaeologically to be a depiction of Moloch. So it's really just the best guess of scholars. Going along with that, as I said, very little archaeological evidence, and that most likely means that the name Moloch, which we know, which of course scholars get from the biblical narrative, it's most likely the name of a god in Hebrew, but that same god was most likely not worshipped by that name by whatever Canaanite and Amorite cultures worshipped Moloch. So we know a god that was referred to as Moloch, but we don't know how the people that worshipped this particular god referred to him. And that's where things can kind of get a little bit muddy. Some people, to add more confusion to this admittedly scattered podcast, I apologize. I don't feel like I'm doing the best job I've ever done on a podcast. The research was very interesting, but I feel like when I start actually speaking into the microphone, I'm totally scattered. I hope that's just me being overly critical. Anyway, getting back on track, some scholars do believe that Moloch is just another name for Baal, but that seems unlikely. Some believe that, but most scholars think that that is probably an oversimplification. Most likely, Moloch and Baal within the pantheon of the Canaanite gods and the other cultures that worship them shared a close relationship, but they were distinct. And the reason that Moloch often comes up in the Old Testament is human sacrifice. Now, this is the part where I talked about if you're squeamish, I'm not going to get into the nitty-gritty details, but this is, yeah, you'll see what I mean. Moloch is most closely associated of all the Old Testament gods with human sacrifice. And as scholars understand it, more than likely, it was the father sacrificing his son to the cult of Moloch. And based on some passages in Jeremiah, the commonly accepted way that this was done is Moloch was an idol made of brass, and that idol had outstretched arms, but the inside of this brass idol was hollow. And what they would do is that they would heat up the idol from the inside in this hollow cavity. And when the outstretched arms were red hot, the child would be placed on the arms and burned in sacrifice. Just saying that, I can't wrap my head around it. I'm a father. It makes me sick. Now, if that wasn't bad enough, because the cult of Moloch, the priests, did not want any fathers to have sacrificial remorse, they, during the ceremony, would beat on drums very loudly so that they could drown out the screams of the child. I can hardly imagine a more horrific scene, but that is what is closely associated with the god Moloch. Another tradition has a different take on sacrifice to Moloch, no less horrific, but different. Same type of deal, brass idol that was hollow and divided into 7 compartments. And in each compartment would be a different sacrifice. So in the first compartment, there was flour. In the second, there were turtle doves. In the third, there was a ewe? I think, is that a female sheep? Is that how you pronounce that? We're going to go with ewe. In the fourth, there was a ram. The fifth, there's a calf. The sixth, there is an ox. And in the seventh, there is a child. And then a fire was lit, and all of these compartments were burned until they were dead. Anyway, there is an archaeological dispute of the god Moloch. There is an archaeologist in 1935 named Otto Eisfeldt who published an idea that there is no such god as Moloch, but that the reference to Moloch is only a reference to a specific type of sacrifice. So Moloch means sacrifice, not god. And when a source refers to Moloch, it could be a sacrifice to whatever god, maybe not mentioned, but it's a specific, apparently, child sacrifice that was referred to by this name. That idea has been widely discredited. Only a very small amount of scholars still hold to that. Generally speaking, ancient scholars, or I should say scholars of antiquity, believe that there was a god Moloch, but there's just no strong evidence to say that that god was the name used by the Canaanites, or whether that was just the Hebrew name for an unknown god of the Canaanites. So that's Moloch. Horrific in every way. That one will stick in your brain for a long time. I really am glad I live in modern times. We got some pretty horrible things going on in the modern times. Don't get me wrong. Wars, trafficking, everything like that. But I have never heard of a child being burned on a brass idol until they were dead. So thank goodness for that. And if that ever did happen, we should burn that whole religion down. Last up is the deity Chemosh. Looks like Chemosh, but it's pronounced Chemosh. C-H-E-M-O-S-H. Not a huge amount is known of the god Chemosh, but what we do know is that he was the main deity of the Moabites. And from the archaeological and textual evidence that is presented, apparently Chemosh was the deity that gave the Moabites success in battle, or if he was angered, he was the deity that allowed them to be defeated in battle. Now, a little bit about Moab. Moab is the ancient culture that was located in modern-day Jordan. They were on the eastern shore of the Dead Sea, and according to the biblical narrative, they were descendants of Lot from an incestuous relationship with his eldest daughter. King David, interestingly enough, Moabitish descent through his great-grandmother Ruth, and during the reign of King David, Moab was a vassal state conquered by David. Disappears from the historical record sometime after the Jewish return from the Babylonian exile, and now some sources refer to Moabites as Arabs. So it could be that the Arab culture is the modern day descendants of Moab. Possibly, it's not for sure. Moab is closely related to Ammon, which was a country also descended from Lot's incestuous relationship with his younger daughter. But like I said, not much is known about Chemosh specifically. May have been a deity that was closely related or even identical to Moloch. There is some dispute on that. Judges in the Bible maintains that Chemosh is the god of the Ammonites, but there is also evidence to suggest that human sacrifice may have been used in worship to Chemosh. So there are those that, even though most people think of Chemosh as the Moabite god, because there is evidence that the Ammonites also worshipped Chemosh, that it could be Moloch. No way to know for sure. There's also evidence to suggest that Chemosh is the Moabite equivalent of Baal, just under a different name. So basically what I'm saying is that I have no idea, but I'm going to treat Chemosh as many scholars do, which is a separate identity that is very closely associated with those other gods. One of the reasons behind that is because Chemosh is one of the very few gods that also has a contemporary source that comes from a culture other than Israel. And that's called the Mesha Stele, or the Moab Stone. The Moab Stone is a carving on a pillar, basically, a stele. and it differs very strongly from the contemporary biblical story. In the biblical story, the nation of Moab was conquered by Israel, and Chemosh allowed this to happen. Well, that's what the Moabites would say, at least. But the Moab stone says the complete opposite. Says that Chemosh was pleased with Moab and allowed the king, Mesha, to completely conquer Israel and reclaim their independence and no longer have to be a vassal state to Israel. So, yeah, completely opposite. But one way or the other, Chemosh is the Moabitish god that allows victory in battle. And that's really all that is known for sure about Chemosh. If it's true that it's the same deity as Moloch or Baal, then we've already discussed them. And if it's not true, then maybe there is evidence out there that will give us a more in-depth look into the god Chemosh. But since I don't have that, I have to bring this podcast to an end. So that brings us to the end of the episode on the gods of the Old Testament. I'm not sure I hit all of the gods of the Old Testament, but I feel like I hit some of the major ones, and I wanted to make sure that I hit the relevant information for each one of them. I know this episode maybe got a little scattered, maybe a little confusing. I would recommend looking into these on your own if you're interested. I tried to make sure that I didn't go way over time, and I didn't want to do a long series on these different gods. But I can see how you might have been a little lost at times. Maybe I could have done a little bit better at clearly explaining some of the different relationships these gods had. So I apologize for that. If you got lost, that's on me, not on you. But I appreciate you listening all the way to the end. I hope you come back and keep listening. Curiosity Chronicles is really starting to take off. Got some international listeners. Shout out to my listeners in Sweden and the Philippines, as well as the UK, Australia, United States, as well as Canada. Hope you tell your friends. Keep spreading the word. I really appreciate it. Keep bringing people into the Curiosity Chronicles. The more people that listen, the more excited I get to bring new content to you. And so I just always am looking for that motivation to keep this going. Almost got one full year in. Looking forward to year two. I got material for 3 or 4 more years. So let's keep this train rolling. Come back next month, November. We'll be talking about Dan Cooper. Talk about the plane he hijacked, the money he stole, how he jumped out with a parachute, and why the world now knows him as D.B. Cooper. So that's what we're going to be talking about next time on the Curiosity Chronicles. Until then, my name is Brett Bylsma. I am your host, and I hope that you stay curious.